Last week in our gospel, we heard the disciples ask Jesus to increase their faith. And so he gives them that teaching, and then we sort of go on, and as he's going forth into Jerusalem, he encounters the 10 lepers. Now, I'm sure you probably have heard the story of what leprosy did for one. That when you were discovered to be with leprosy, first of all, you were outcast not only from your family, but from the town in which you lived. You were forced to go out and gather with the other lepers. And you survived by begging, for asking for handouts. People came by and you had to ring a bell. You had a little bell around your neck, and when people would come, you would ring that bell so that they would know and be warned that there are lepers up ahead and stay clear. And then you would have to cry out when they got closer, unclean, unclean. And so people would avoid you. And so when these 10 lepers heard that Jesus was coming, they saw a chance to be healed. And so they rang their bells and they cried out, "Save us, Lord, save us." And Jesus tells them, "Go and show yourself to the priest." And on the way to the priest, they realize that they have been cleansed. And one of them chooses to return. I remember, you know, in a seminary, which was some probably 50 years ago, reading a story in a book. And the part of the story was explaining why the other 9 lepers did not return. And I can sort of still remember part of it. I can't remember a lot of it. But you know, the thing was, is that it gave very valid reasons for each one of those 9 lepers for not coming back, for being human. I mean, one of them had some grandchildren that he had never seen. One of them had a wife that he had to leave very shortly after they were married. One of them had a farm that was going down the hill unless he could get back to take care of it. And so you think there, you know, as we sort of read the gospel, our first reaction to see is, you know, well, these people are very ungrateful. Shouldn't they have come with the foreigner, with the Samaritan, and taken time to give thanks to Jesus? But yet, you know, they were only being human. And they're being very much like we are. Or we can be. Sometimes, you know, we get so caught up in our blessings that we forget to take time to say thank you. Jesus is not only pointing out the importance of being thankful. But he's also sort of challenging sort of today what we might call Christian privilege. You know, we hear the term white privilege, which really means, you know, that, you know, being born white, that there are certain privileges that we may not even realize, or benefits that come from that status that other people who are not white don't have. And so the apostles, you know, when asking for faith, that they were sort of also, you know, Jesus knew that they were also sort of saying, you know, as we are Christ followers. And so because of that, you know, we have a certain place, a certain privilege, a certain benefit. And so too, Jesus sort of points out to the Jews that just because you are a Jew, just because you are a God's chosen one, just because you are a follower of Christ doesn't necessarily give you any special benefits. Naaman, you know, was not a Jew. And yet he was the one that Elisha cured of leprosy. The one who came back to give thanks was a Samaritan and not a Jew. Sometimes, you know, maybe we suffer from what we call Christian privilege. That because we are followers of Christ, we sort of expect certain privileges. We expect certain blessings, a certain status. Because we believe in Jesus, we follow Jesus, maybe our life should be a little bit easier, a little bit more blessed, a little better. But Jesus reminds us that his blessing, the blessing of his Father, go out to all people. And sometimes because we are Christians or followers of Christ, maybe more is expected of us. And one of those things is to sort of give thanks to God for the blessings he has given to us. About a month ago, I had my annual checkup with my cardiologist. And it's been about 7 years ago since I had a couple stents put in at St. Vincent's. And as I was getting ready to have my visit with my cardiologist, he had me do an echocardiogram. And in the echocardiogram, it sort of showed that I had a blockage in one of my arteries. One of the arteries that had a stent in it. That there was like a 60% blockage. And so he, therefore, you know, wanted me to have a stress test. And so I had a two-part stress test. Part of it was on Wednesday. And the second part was on Friday. And it was about 1 o'clock on Friday. So I get a call about 2:30 Friday afternoon saying that the doctor would like to see me Monday morning at 8 o'clock. Now, you know, on my mind I'm saying, okay, the doctor wants to see me. I just had a stress test. I've got a blockage. You know, I'm probably going to have some stents put in or something. And this happened to be the weekend of our parish picnic. So that sort of played heavily, you know, on my mind. Not real heavily, because I didn't get real upset or worried. I had faith. So Monday I went in. And the doctor explained is that, you know, okay, you've got the blockage. You know, the stress test saw something unusual. And so I want you to go in and to have an angioplasty. And my partner does that. So I want you to do it tomorrow. Well, tomorrow was Tuesday and I had a funeral to go to. So we scheduled it for Wednesday. So Wednesday I go in. We do the angioplasty. The doctor comes out and says, well, the blockage is still there. We couldn't get rid of the blockage because the blockage is right by one of the stents. And the thing is, the only way we can do that is if we put another stent in it, and we don't traditionally put a stent in unless there's more than a 70% blockage, and you're only 60%. So I think we can, you know, take care of this with medication. So he's, you know, says, okay, you know, for a couple hours I'm going to send you home, and I'll let Dr. Electrocardiologist know. Well, my cardiologist finds out, and about a half hour later he shows up. And he says, you know, I can let you go, but we might be back on the same road in 6 months, a year and a half, 2 years. The thing is that when you did your stress test, it shows something that was a little bit more perturbing, maybe even life-threatening. And so because of that, you know, I've got this colleague in St. Rita's in Lima. And I want to send you there and have him take a look and see what he says. Another opinion. And he started talking to us like, you know, well, you know, we're going to say no, we don't want to go, whatever. But Bobby and I said, yeah, we're ready. I want to be well. And so, you know, at 10 o'clock, 9 o'clock that night, they come and pick me up, and I get down to St. Rita's about 11 o'clock at night. And because, you know, I may have a procedure done at the next day after midnight, they stock, you know, all food and drink. So it's about 11 o'clock the following morning. One of the cardiologist assistants comes in, and she sort of asks what's happening. And so I sort of explain, you know, the different opinions and whatnot, and that, you know, that they wanted to see the doctor's opinion here. And she again told me, well, you know, we usually don't stent unless there's, you know, 70% blockage. But I will sit there and talk with Dr. Patel and see what he says. Well, he comes in about 2:30 with his entourage and says, you know, the problem is we've got a lot of opinions here. We got one doctor's opinion, we got another doctor's opinion. The thing is, we need some facts to go on and make a decision. And it just so happens that my colleague is down in ultrasound today. And so what I want to do is we're going to send you down to ultrasound, and they're going to do what they call a quick stress test again. And if that shows that you need the stent, we will put the stent in. If not, you know, we'll bring you back up and probably send you home. So it's about 5 o'clock. I've had nothing to eat and drink since midnight the night before. So I'm hungry. But I go down, and they sort of sedate me and whatever. And Bobby's over in the waiting room. And they do the test. And as Bobby would tell me later, that as the doctor told her, that when my heart was under stress, my heart became what they refer to as a widowmaker. In other words, it became very life-threatening. So they put the stent in, and they sent me back, into my room and discharged me the following day. And doctor says, you know, your heart now, your arteries are 100%. You're good to go for another 5 years, 50,000 miles, whichever comes first. And so I'm out of the hospital. You know, I got my follow-up appointment with my doctor. And I'm sitting there, and I'm starting cardiac rehab. And as I'm coming out, I see him standing in the hallway. And I go up to him, and I just say, thank you for your persistence. Thank you for your belief in knowing my history. I'm not sitting there and saying, you know, just taking what his colleague says, what his partner says, who we trust very much, but going that extra mile. And when I went to see him the following Friday for my follow-up appointment, he said all three of the doctors that were involved with him sent him a letter saying, thank you for your persistence. Thank you for calling it right and probably saving my life. Of course, I'm very thankful and very grateful for him, for Katie for watching out for me, and for God watching out for me. And life has taken on maybe a little bit of a new meaning, a little bit more importance. The thing is that, you know, the 9 lepers got caught up in life. It wasn't that they weren't thankful, but it's just that they had other things to do. They had other things that they missed, that they wanted to get back to. Loving family and friends. I mean, you can just imagine that if you were sit there and cast out from your family and Ganassi and had to sit there and beg and ring a bell and, you know, and yell, unclean, that if you were cleansed, how you would react, how much joy you would be filled. And maybe in their heart they thank God as they went their way. As Christians, it is important for us to always to be filled with gratitude. Because, you know, in gratitude, when we say thank you, we also come to realize how important this person, this decision was in our life. When I say thank you to my cardiologist, I was saying to him, how thankful was, how important was his decision in saving my life. And so when we take a moment, as we should every day, to thank God for his blessings, to thank God for what he has done for us, for just being with us, then God becomes important. We remember what God is doing for us. We remember how important he is. We remember how much we rely and depend upon him. And he becomes important. And being thankful, we sit there and it's a time and a way in which we realize just how much we depend upon others and what he has done for us and how blessed we are. And this goes not only for just God, but as you think about it, for everyone, for your spouse, for your children, your parents, your neighbors, your parishioners. You know, when we take time to say thank you for a card, for a prayer, for appreciation, we realize in our mind just how important, how much part of our life they are, and how much we need them and how special they are. And truly, you know, that is a sign of a Christian, one of gratitude for the blessings of God shown directly through him and Jesus, and directly of God's love by those around us, by one another. We gather today in the Eucharist. And the Eucharist in Greek, you know, if you translate it, basically means thankfulness, to give thanks. We come here to Mass. We come to give thanks for God, for he is with us. That we can be one with him, that he will be one with us. For all the blessings that he has given to us in the past week and in the weeks to come. We gather with those who too we are thankful that share our faith and support us and are one with us. As we go forth, let us make it part of our resolution to every day to take a moment to be thankful. To be thankful for God and Jesus and his blessings and for those we live with and for those who touch us, even the stranger. Even the Samaritan, even people like Naaman. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.